Hey, you're listening to the Prime Culture Podcast. This Prime Culture is for the dreamers, the schemers, and the believers. We're here to introduce a whole new generation to the abundant life. We're here for the prime of our lives.
You know what I want to say, Andrew? I want to really commend you on resisting the spirit of cowardice and putting in the pod. I watched, and Kevin
got shut out.
Was Leslie happy?
I'm like, what are we talking about?
Did she watch it? She, yeah.
And so she subscribed.
She subscribe?
We got one more subscriber. Praise God.
Come on now. 418. Come on, Jesus. Get us to 500 this year. Hey, welcome back to the pod, man. I hope it's been great. I'm excited about Right Side Up this year. Mm-hmm. I really am, man. Everywhere in our own personal life, in how we've been walking with young men and women of all ages that we have been discipling and mentoring and just pastoring. Man, this is the year of Right Side Up, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. But, you know, we are continuing a conversation today. Usually I have a lot more preamble, but today we got to be all killer, no filler. Last week we heard, man, I heard a lot back from the last episode. I'm saying last week. I don't know why I said, we recorded last week, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Okay, look at us. I got a ton of feedback on just, you know, how do I stop or why am I taking L's in my life? And I'll tell you what, man, the concept and the thought of covering and covenant and submission is a big deal. And I'm really proud of Prime Culture for being open to it.
Right.
At Culture Night, I said something that has been... The Lord said it, right? I'm going to do my best to be humble. However, the scripture taught us something in Matthew 9 that the Lord had compassion, not because they were sick, but because they were confused.
Yeah.
And they were confused, and in their confusion, they were helpless. Why? Because they were sheep without a shepherd. They were individuals who needed covenant and covering, and they had neither. And so the result and the direct correlative of life is confusion and helplessness when we are walking without covenant and covering. And I think that's a big deal, man. And so whatever context of life you're in, if you're dating, if you are relating, if you are just, you know, hanging, if you are socializing, if you're professionally and adulting and all of that, I'm telling you, man, that concept of covering and covenant is a big deal. And today what we wanted to do is take a few minutes to just build some construct and get some ideas right side up about marriage. You started this conversation, so this is your fault last week. You started the conversation about marriage and what marriage is and is not. And I just thought we should take a few minutes today to talk about that.
Yeah, we should.
In no particular structure necessarily. I mean, I think you guys know this. Our conversations are spirit-led. And they're fed by the well of our lives. And so I think the last week we determined we have 36 years of collective marriage counsel and perspective, which praise the Lord for that. But I'd love to talk about that. This is what marriage is, and this is why you need to know. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about some pain points around why young adults and just people keep getting their hearts broken when it comes to the context of marriage.
Yeah. Are you saying that before people get married or once they're in it?
Or both.
Either or.
Mm-hmm. Now listen, I will say this, and this might be a controversial take. I hope you get your heart broken before you get married to that person.
I think that's a big issue. The problem is that usually doesn't happen because we counsel so many young adults. Oh, we've never fought. Like you come to premarital
like that's
counseling.
A win.
Yeah. Like that's their flex. You're coming to premarital counseling because, you know, we're perfect for each other. We love each other. We've never fought. And to me, that's a red flag. And it's like a green flag.
To which point I'm like, will you counsel us?
So how did you do it?
Exactly.
Please tell us in the 8 months you've been dating, tell us how you did it.
And so I think a big shock where I guess we can start is before you get married and then you actually get married. I think there's a honeymoon phase, right? Between maybe 3 to 6 months that you have the dopamine, you have the oxytocin, you have all the good feels all over you.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden that booster shot wears off and now it's like, shoot, like he's dirty. He has bad breath. He doesn't pick up his clothes.
Dang, like, who is he?
You're talking about after you get married and you live together? Okay.
I think, honestly, I think that would be a great construct to have this conversation, to talk about the pain point and how it shows up, how it should show up before.
Right.
And how it actually ends up showing up after.
Right.
Because that's like my test, like what I face every time I do a counseling is like, you didn't catch this when it was showing up in dating because you were calling it something else.
Well, so let's help you that. Were blinded.
Let's help. Let's take the blinders off. Let's take the, you know.
Yeah. Like, so to me about fighting is like you think peace when you're dating is like the way
it's the win.
Is the win uh-huh. into marriage. And peace when you're dating, it means a
cover up.
It means you lie. No, I'm just kidding. What it means is you're sacrificing conflict that it's going to happen. And what happens in some of my counselings is they're trying to have all of the conflict that they should have had in dating within the first year of marriage. And it just becomes overwhelming because we have to talk about finances. We never talked about it. We have to talk about our values when it comes to church. We have to talk about values when it comes to drinking. There's some people I've counseled before that they have different views on drinking. And one of the persons was hoping the other person would change their mind. They were both hoping.
Yep.
Exactly.
But again,
it's something that I hear coming out already is, and please forgive me for thinking this way. This is how my mind works, right? But it's almost like you either you're not ready to be married or you have no idea what marriage is if you haven't done this. And one of the things is, man, if in your dating life, all you talk about is how you feel and what you think about each other what you think about each other, you're not anywhere near marriage. What I'm hearing both of y'all say is the conversations that lead into a real marriage and a life-giving marriage is when we've had conversations about shared values.
Yep.
And we just say, hey, what do you do with your money? Talk to me about it. Now, you know, like, I don't know that I would be as extreme as to like, hey, show me your 401k balance.
No, that's
or
crazy.
Let me see your,
well,
you know,
I do think it depends on the age.
Let me see your credit score.
It depends on the age.
Like for me, it's like if you want to know something about someone's consistency, you want to know someone's integrity, get that run a credit check. I'm serious, bro.
I think if you're in your 30s, I think that's a very plausible question.
Why 30s? There people are buying houses at 25.
No, I know. Yeah. But that when we were in our 20s, we just had no clue.
Oh, yeah.
I would say there's a lot of people that have no clue at 20s. Right?
Yeah, and they might not even understand that question. You're asking me about something that I'm not, I can't
that.
Even
then
give
why,
you.
Then why, then look, in this, I'll say this with all the love of my heart. I knew this was going to be a spicy episode. I knew it. But here you go. God bless you. I say it because I love you. If you don't even know the construct of a credit score, why are you dating anybody?
Yeah. Right? Because I want to be loved.
Well, here's the thing.
I want to be provided for.
I don't even think it's that deep. I want recreation. Mm-hmm. I want recreation. I want some attention, which I'm going to repeat a revelation that God gave me last week. Get a puppy. For real. If you want to have fun, if you want attention, if you want someone to just be happy when you come around, don't do that with a human being. Do that with a puppy.
Yeah.
Get a puppy. Unless you're dating and you want to get a puppy together. Don't do that. Because when
don't
you break
do
up,
that.
Inevitably, when you break up, you're going to have a custody battle.
Yes. And we have gone through those custody battles.
And those are real and they're real painful.
And they're real feelings. It's wild to me. Sorry, guys.
Right. So to me, the first one, if we're going to start putting some handles to it, is if you are, I guess, attempting peace in your dating life, that is a red flag. And it'll show up in your marriage as you're going to try.
As chaos.
It's going to be chaos.
Okay. Yeah. Can I give that a little bit of drill down? Because I hear what we're saying if you're attempting peace. I don't think attempting peace is a wrong thing. But if your attempt at peace is denial.
Or avoidance.
That is not marriage and that's not marriage material. You're fooling yourself, right? If it's like, if what you call peace is denial, like, and here's what I mean by denial. You're at Applebee's and you're talking. Or I don't know where you go for dates, right? But like, and you're talking and they say something that for you is like, but you don't say anything. That's avoidance and that's denial.
Yeah. Well, what I meant to say is to me, the opposite of peace in this context would be agreement. That's what you want. You want agreed upon values rather than
confrontation.
Exactly.
Very good.
And reconciliation would happen after the conflict. Does that make sense?
Very good. But yeah, that's great.
If it's just peace as a feeling, peace as in like, everything's okay.
Yes. I don't want to ruffle any feathers.
Of course.
I don't want
to
move.
We're called to be peacemakers, which is the reason you will have a conflict with somebody and then achieve reconciliation afterwards.
Good.
But I do think peace as like a feeling or just obtain
a state.
Are we good?
Can we
be good?
Can we not fight? Because fighting is bad. Fighting is bad for dating. I would say Well, if you already know you're going to be fighting a lot with this person, it's telling you everything about values exactly. and everything. But I do think what you said is, and this is something I learned from Cruz, we don't want to share assumptions. We want agreed upon values. 100%. And we should be having conversations about what we value. And if we are not on the same page, let's talk about it.
Right.
Let me find out about you, where you stand on that. Let me find out.
I also want to put on that you don't always want to be arguing all the time either. Now, say you have the conflict and you can't get to a resolution where it's like peaceful and respectful and you're literally always at each other's throats. That's not dating. You're practicing divorce. It's too much emotion. You're already further than you should be. So these should be confrontations that you can have a conversation with.
Well, I think to add some texture to that is if you're going to have tension and friction, because I don't think we can just black and white it so easily. There's complexity to it, right? So like now, have we seen couples fight over dumb stuff? Absolutely, right? Like how come your friend doesn't talk to me or when I get there, and or how come when we go out to eat and you never turn around and just pay attention to me? You're always paying attention to everyone else at the table. It's like, man, shut up. Like, go away. Like that's dumb, yeah. right? Respectfully. Did you know that you can say respectfully after you say insulting things and it makes it right?
It makes really? It awesome. Very nice.
Anyway, but I do think good friction is healthy. Right. If we're having friction about, okay, hey, where would you want to spend Christmas every year? Well, I want to go to Chihuahua. We go to Chihuahua every single year, and it's like, wait a minute, hold on. You know, not that there's anything wrong with going to Chihuahua, right? I love Chihuahua. I've been going to preach there like the last 3 years. I love it. Nothing wrong with Chihuahua. What I'm saying is there might be some friction about, wait, hold on. I don't know that I want to go there every three months. I don't know. Wait, can we talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's some friction that's good to figure out in your dating life.
Yeah. Right. Well, right? I think that's the conflict and friction that we want. What I'm talking about is yelling and screaming and now we're not going to talk because we like that's immaturity. Right. Where if you're dating, it's like it shouldn't be that hard.
Right. And that was my point. My point is not everything should be a fight and not every friction is bad. Yeah. Right.
I think the conversation should be driven by curiosity. That's it.
Yep.
And intentionality for sure.
Because you also don't want to make a person feel like they're being vetted. Like you're like, let me see if you're good enough for me.
Right, it's an interview. Right.
It's curiosity. And to me, the boundaries, like if you're dating somebody and you want to do what we're recommending that you do, is you approach, every time you see this person, you approach it with curiosity. I'm curious to know more about you, to know what you're about, what you love, where you stand on. And rather than going to both sides, one of the sides is complete peace. Let's just talk about everything that makes us happy. And let's just like put a highlight reel every single time we talk. Mm-hmm. And the other side is like, so tell me about those are opposites trauma. You never want to be in. And I think the sweet spot is curiosity that is driven by just wanting to know this person.
Intention.
But at the same time, you're doing that curiosity with the objective of obtaining knowledge about the person's values. That's why I'm asking you. That's why I'm curious about you, because I want to know who you are and what you stand for.
Yeah, I think this is brilliant. The both of you are just nailing it, because as I'm hearing you guys share on both sides, the curiosity and then just like let's not be shallow and childish, right? Mm-hmm. With our friction and our fighting, like. I know we're talking at it about it from the dating context, but as I'm thinking, as I'm hearing you and I'm thinking about our life, right? It's like, wait, hold on. That's actual married life.
Yeah, that
like,
is married
like
life.
We do that all the time.
Yeah.
There is a constant curiosity. I love that you said that, right? Where it's like, hey, what's going on with that? Hey, I just noticed a little bit of a tone. Like, what? Help me understand what that is. Hey, what's happening? Hey, what? You know, there's an ongoing curiosity, and if you can't establish that right now, you think that that's going to go away with marriage?
Yeah, that is.
Oh my gosh, man, I love you with all my heart, but you're setting yourself up for a whole lot of disappointment.
Yeah.
She's always asking me questions. Yeah, she's curious, bro. She gave her life to you, dog. Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful point that I don't think anybody's ever really talked about it, because it is a muscle of communication and curiosity that you have to exercise.
My marriage started getting better like year 4 or 5 when I became more curious about my wife.
Yeah.
And it started on a birthday dinner that we did, where I just did a fun thing and I just went to a questionnaire online or whatever, something 40 questions to ask your wife to get her to know. And I thought it was silly, but I thought it would be funny. And then we did it. And then at the end of the night, I was like, oh my God,
I don't even know
there
you.
There was so much stuff I didn't know about you. And then that curiosity just like brings in, brings like a deeper intimacy and you feel closer friends. And you feel like, and that, from that, I will say, I'll just be super transparent. From that, I learned that my marriage would stay alive. The I guess directly correlated with how curious I can be about my wife as I age with her.
Yeah.
If I treat her like I got you figured out, there's nothing else I can find out about
that's
you.
The end, that's the end of a
that's
relationship.
That's the end of the relationship.
Yeah. 100%. And I love what you said. You said something, you said it's about building intimacy, right? And if we think that marriage is just about being happy, that's wrong. It's about having intimacy,
right?
And we discover intimacy with each other and for each other all the time, even in our times of friction.
Yeah.
You know, like I think about this all the time, that that marriage is an ongoing progressive understanding of a progressing person.
Yeah. I love that.
Right? Like it's just an ongoing progressive. It's, you know, honestly, you said this beautifully the last episode, that it's a snapshot of Jesus and his church, right? And it's the church in the marriage context, we have an ongoing progressive revelation of Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And that's where holy, holy, holy comes from, right? Like, man, I just see aspects of him all the time that are new and they're beautiful. And it's like, man, when I was 17, when I was learning to love Jesus is different. When I'm 27 and I'm seeing a view of him, and much like us, right? When you and I were dating at 18, was beautiful then, but then at 28, it was beautiful. And then when you became a mother, now I'm a husband to a mother and a professional. That's what the heck? And now we have teenage kids. We have a 13-year-old, and it's like, oh my gosh, like, and it's a progressive understanding and a progressive intimacy with a progressing person.
Yeah.
Right. And so if we think that, you said it last time, that marriage is this trophy, it's this static thing, we have
that
it wrong.
Obtain, yeah.
It's lifelong learning. Marriage is lifelong learning. It will not end.
What I love about curiosity too is that it helps kill assumptions.
Oh, very good.
A lot of times when you get in marriage, there's so much assumptions. And when you think you know the other person, or you don't know, or whatever your assumption is of the other person, that's how your life is gonna go. And that's a lot of, that was us for like the first couple of years. We had so many assumptions of one another, and we didn't know how to communicate. Yeah. So I think when we both became unselfish, started realizing that marriage really is death to self and service to other, is when we became humble enough to become curious, to lose the assumption and actually ask the question.
Yeah. I love that you bring up the thought of selfishness. Before we started airing, or before we started shooting, I made this statement that I'd been thinking about earlier today about, and the statement is this: consent is not covenant, right? Having consent is not covenant. I remember our first few years of marriage, selfishly, I just wanted consent. Hey, I'm going to go play basketball with the guys. I'll be home when I'm home. Right. I behaved like, you can attest to this. I don't care. You know, the Lord has redeemed me.
I'm a new person,
right? I'm a new creation in Christ. But how often, you know, I think I was a bigger culprit of this than you were. But how often would I just care about you saying yes and not think about the commitment that we had with each other and think about the covenant of you being my priority,
right?
Versus just like, no, yeah, but you said yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you said yes, not even thinking about the commitment to serve, the commitment to put you first, the vows that we made before, you know, each other and the Lord. And I think sometimes, you know, we really make that mistake that just because I say I do, which is consent, we think that automatically becomes covenant. And I think that's because in dating, all we look for is consent. Are you good with this? Are you good with it? When covenant should be, let me serve you.
Yeah.
And serving it's you deeper. Means denying myself.
Yeah.
Right? And so how about that in dating? How about you act like husbands and wives before you say I do, before you buy a house, before you put rings on it? How about you act like a husband and wife and you have a covenant with God? This is a hot take. I love y'all, but here we go. And my covenant with God should override the consent she gives me. Hello? Right?
Yeah.
Right? So I think for a lot of us, marriage is not just consent. Marriage is not just that, it's covenant. Just because you said yes doesn't make it right for me to go and play basketball. Because I was a basketball guy like our first 4 or 5 years of marriage, and we lived on the west side, and there was this gym up on Paragon in North Mesa Hills. and they would stay open till like 2 a.m. And I would just go run. I would just go run ball till probably about 11, 12 at night. And like she'd get home from studying or you were in grad school at the time. And I would just ignore her phone calls and not, you know, it's like Tuesday, you should know where I'm at. You told me I could do this. And so I had consent, but I was behaving so outside of covenant. Right?
Yeah, it was rough.
Wow. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I think we should talk about covenant. I think people, I think we're using that word right now. And I think, and it's funny because I'm starting to think like you, but you said curiosity and we're talking about covenant and of such things a marriage is made. So what is covenant? What is covenant? Let's talk about, obviously, I think we need to talk about the meaning of the word and the context that it comes from theologically, but what does that also look like in a marriage? Mm-hmm. Why are people not living in covenant even though they're married? One of the things that you said right now is that you should be practicing this. So dating is practicing marriage. That's what actually you should be doing. You should be getting better at marriage when you're dating. So how can somebody who is young practice covenant?
That's a good word.
Yeah.
What? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just wanted to clarify. We don't want you practicing marriage, like husband and wife, dating, because
within the confines of your current covenant.
Yes, come on.
We just want to clear that up. We're good.
Pastor Felipe said
exactly.
No, what I meant.
We could go on a honeymoon. That's what he said. That's what Pastor Felipe said.
Yeah. That's not what I said.
So, oh my gosh, man.
So.
Go ahead.
So biblically speaking, a covenant at its very, very fundamental is an agreement between two people. Okay. And when you see covenant throughout the context of scripture, it's not about what I'm getting from the other person. Yeah. It's actually what I'm giving up for the other person. Covenant is more about that than it is a contract. A contract is you do this, I pay you this, right?
It's an exchange.
Covenant is different than contract. Contract is transactional. Covenant is relational. Covenant makes us one. Whenever there was covenant in the Old Testament, covenant was always marked with the shedding of blood. You don't shed blood for contracts in the Old Testament. There's contractual agreements throughout the Old Testament. Right? You do this, you get this. You do this, you get this. Covenant is, I will be this with you and for you to my own demise if it happens.
Yeah, it's a sacrifice. Yeah.
Right. I will be your God. So I think about one of the first covenants that is cut in the Old Testament, Genesis 17, the Lord makes a covenant with Abraham. And with Abraham, he says, I will be your God, you will be my people. It's a beautiful snapshot. I don't have time to go into all the theological prominence and the messianic thoughts because in biblical construct, a covenant is cut between God and man, but then Jesus comes and the covenant that we have in new covenant in the covenant of grace is that the covenant is between God and his son, Jesus. Mm-hmm. And we benefit from that covenant. We can't ruin that covenant. Right. So anyway, but at its foremost, when we think about the covenant of marriage is really two individuals saying, I am willing to die. Mm-hmm. This is what I will lose. This is what I will sacrifice. I am willing to die as an individual to be reborn in the marriage, in the marriage act, in the marriage construct as one with you. Covenant would make you one in the Old Testament and in the New Testament.
Yeah.
So I hope that makes sense. That makes sense.
100%. Yeah. I was just gonna say that I think we might have some people who think they're living in covenants in some other marriages. And this, I think what I said last time about the trophy, that's a contract.
Right.
That's something I'm signing this so I get this in return.
Yeah.
And covenant is the opposite. This is what I'm responsible for.
Yeah.
Like I agree to this and this is what I guarantee you will get. So now in the context of dating, and I think now that you brought that up, the thing about this is what I'm not saying. I do think though that there are some people practicing marital covenant in dating early. Mm-hmm. And I think it's out of time and it's out of place.
Right.
So what kind of covenant should people, let's say if somebody is a young couple, they just met they met at the speed dating at Culture Night or something like that. Mm-hmm. Hey, shout out.
First coffee date.
No, don't talk about it. Don't deviate the conversation.
Oh, you saw me?
Yeah, I saw you, bro.
Look in my eyes.
You were like,
it was a good coffee date.
I won't talk about it. Like, I won't say that a guy told one of our girls, I'll go to coffee with you. I won't say that.
And what happened? They didn't show up.
And that he just ghosted her. I won't say that at all.
Thank you for not saying that. By the way,
if you're watching this, I know your name. And you know I know you. So there you go. God bless you.
God bless.
But I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not.
Man, I'm so grateful.
Because I'm a Christian. You know what I'm saying?
I literally saw your face. I was like, oh man, what did I walk into? But going back to my point was, so if young people are very determined, they're ready to date.
Okay.
They're ready to get married and they're getting to know each other. When do we move into that covenant relationship? Obviously, that happens after you say, I do. As a marriage, right? How can they be, I guess, practicing those principles and that behavior and that disposition with one another in the dating life? I do think that's a gigantic question that I haven't even thought about it until right now.
It's a beautiful question.
How can I walk with this person I'm very much interested in, but I want to do it the Lord's way. And I definitely want to be curious and I want to be in covenant with this person. What does that look like before and after marriage?
Oh, I love it. It doesn't differentiate that much before and after marriage. Here's why. Marriage is a construct that is only meaningful when it is established in our commitment to the vertical relationship with the Lord, expressed to the horizontal relationship with the person in front of me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So a marriage construct. Let's talk about expectation of marriage. Faithfulness, sacrifice, care,
integrity,
compassion, integrity, intimacy, all of that. None of that is born the moment you say I do to the person in front of you.
Talk about it.
All of that is received in my new creation and in my regeneration and my redemptive walk with Jesus. Two thoughts. First of all, they asked Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? Watch, he said this, the greatest commandment, and on this commandment, all the law of the prophets hinges. What does that mean? That means that if you keep this commandment, every other law, every other commandment and every other law in the Old Testament will be kept if you can keep this commandment. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. So here you go. I don't know how to love me if I don't receive love from the one that created me.
Yeah, yeah, I love it.
And I don't know how to love you if he hasn't taught me how to love me.
Yeah.
Because I will always love you if I don't have a vertical. I will always love you through the lenses of my selfishness.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and my
needs. Through the lenses of my needs, through the lenses of my trauma, through the filters of my pain, through the filters of my feeling, through the filters of my impulses. However, if my interaction with you is driven through my covenant agreement with him, I love you as I love me. And I'm learning to love me because he loves me.
I think that's so beautifully said.
John says it this way. We love because he loved first, right? So if we don't have even a rudimentary, elementary perspective of God's love for us, how can I love you if I don't know how God loves me?
Yeah.
Right? And so I love how Jesus says it. Jesus says every other law will be fulfilled, every other commandment. If I love God, then I won't covet my neighbor's wife.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If I have a love relationship with God, then I won't steal.
Yeah.
If I have a love relationship with God and a sincere vertical love, I won't have other gods before me.
Yeah.
If I have a love relationship with God, I won't have a graven image. I won't commit murder. I will not kill.
Mm-hmm.
And on it goes if that's there. Does that make sense? And so I learned to love my wife by allowing the Lord to love me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And so I think that one of the first places we should always look in terms of, hey, is this either dateable or marryable material, is what does the love relationship, not does he know where the church is?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because it's like, pastor, he goes to church. Yeah, so does the devil. Yeah. Right? And so do demons. And they tremble. Uh-huh. All he or she goes to church means is that they know one thing or two things. The they know address. Where the building is and they know what time church is at. Mm-hmm. They go to church means nothing to me.
Yeah. I agree.
At all. Seriously.
I think that's such a sobering thought when we come back to like, man, our own relationship Absolutely. With the Lord and how we receive his love, how we view him will be how we are able to relate to anybody else.
100%.
And I think if you're in a rocky place and maybe there's somebody, I don't know, I just feel like there's somebody in the room and you're depressed and you're sad because you've either been broken up with or somebody broke up with you and you're just in a dark place and you're just depressed because of that. I just hear the Lord saying like, come back to me.
Yeah.
Let me love you. Learn to let me love you. And I just think that's such a beautiful thought that as young adults, we try to live life so fast that we forget that our Heavenly Father wants to love us first.
Right.
Yeah. Like one of the most crucial things in a marriage is to be able to die to self in such a quick way. And Jesus gave us that perfect example when he came. And the gospel is a beautiful story of love where God did what we couldn't do first. Right. And he did it and he showed us how. So then when you fully understand and see Christ in that light, then it's becomes so easy to do it for your spouse.
Yeah.
It becomes so, I'm not going to say it's easy. It feels good. What I'm saying, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I know this is going to be costly. There might be somebody listening to this and maybe you and your spouse not clicking right now. Something feels off. Could I just submit to you that be the first person to die to self and say, right. Hey, maybe it's me. Like maybe because that's what happens. That's what happens when we love the Lord and we love our neighbor like ourselves. We kind of imagine loving yourself. You would give yourself a chance. You would give yourself an opportunity to explain yourself. You would give yourself an opportunity to bring clarity to a situation rather than just be accusing and pointing fingers, etc. Right. So to me, covenant in the marriage construct, it looks like what Jesus did for us in our new covenant with him. He was the first one to lay his life down, and that is necessary. It is necessary for you to practice in your dating to maybe put your preferences aside and to put your opinion aside and to find out where you agree, right? But in a marriage, it's essential that you die to self.
Well, I think you brought up bringing up such an incredible point, right? And I think we got to land the plane. Maybe we need a part two on it. but you said learn to die for self, right? And die to
quickly.
Yeah, to die. So look, Jesus, who is our example, says this. He says in John 15, greater love has no man than he who would die for his friend.
Yep.
Right? One of the things that I love about my relationship with Diana is that we learned to be friends before we were lovers. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I know that I hope that doesn't sound corny or goofy, but here's the thing. When I think about times of selflessness with her, she's my friend, right? And the Bible says I show great love when I'm willing to die for my friend, right? So Jesus said, I no longer call you servants. Servants don't know what the master is doing, but I call you friends because everything I know, you know. What is that? That's a mark of intimacy.
Yeah.
There's no secrets here. We're close, right? So am I saying that you need to take a bullet and you need to die? No, what I'm saying though is that there's sacrifice and there's selflessness, right? She's my friend, right? So I'm willing to lay down my life. Well, here's what that means for me right now today. Cruz, what does laying down your life look like? It looks like I lay down my moodiness when I get home, right? In our construct, I'm the one that's moody. Not her.
Same, bro.
She's pretty. Nina's pretty constant, right? I'm moody, and so I want to be moody when I get home. I'm in my house. I want to be comfortable, but I have a choice to make. Am I going to live my own life outside of covenant, or am I going to walk in this covenant? Which what Paul says in the book of Ephesians: husbands, love your wives in the same way that Christ loved the church and gave his life for her. I just performed a wedding ceremony yesterday, literally. Yeah. And in that wedding ceremony, I say to the man, I say, you have the responsibility of being the head of this union. The head of this union means more than you're the one who's in charge, right? It means that you're the one that goes first to set the example of selflessness. Yeah. You're the one that goes first to set the example of sacrifice. And then I said, the man is the head of his home to the extent that he, like Christ, is willing to lay down his life as a denial of himself for the benefit of his wife and his family. I'll say this. How do you know you're not ready for marriage? If you're not willing to deny yourself for the benefit of your friend.
Yeah.
Before she's a hot girl that you want to get in her pants.
That's right.
Is that too much? I don't know. Right? But before she's a hot girl that turns you on.
Bro.
Make her your friend, bro.
Yeah.
But that's beautiful. You just gave language for covenant while you're dating. It's a friendship covenant.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It 100%. Is a, it's a, I'm committed to you as a friend 100%. To get to know you, to respect you, mm-hmm. to honor you.
Absolutely.
Right. And then we marry and that's loving. That's a lover's covenant. It's mm-hmm. something that obviously graduates into being one flesh.
But at the same time, we're always going to be friends because 100%. Sometimes I don't love him, but I always like him. Like I always like him as a friend. Like I like that person no matter what.
I don't know if I like that statement theologically, but I get it.
No, but what you're saying.
You don't always feel lovey-dovey. Sometimes I don't feel like, you know, being in love, but man, I am committed to my friend.
Yeah. And you, well, that's to me, that's still love because you're choosing mm-hmm. somebody. And I mean, we can cover this in another pod, but love is more than a feeling.
Right.
It's a choice. It's a choice. Love you is make a choice. Every day. Absolutely. And you're doing that every time when you don't feel like you love him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say this.
You still choose him.
I'll say this as we end this episode. And I do think maybe, you know, and we talk about it again. Let us know. Like, let's make them call for
this
it.
This is their favorite.
But watch. for me, no, and it should be for all of us. Okay. Your relationships will never go further. I feel bold enough to say it this way. And this absolutely, in this black and white, your relationships will never go further than your commitment to the Lord.
Mm.
Never. They will never go further.
That's the truth. Why? Right? Because the Lord will convict.
Okay. So here's the thought, right? I'm thinking about Joseph. I've been thinking about Joseph all day today, right? And in moments where he's in compromising situations, one specifically is he has opportunity for sexual immorality and he has consent. Watch this.
Yep.
In a situation where he has consent, his boss's wife is like, hey, lay with me. It's all good. I'm you know, what's up? What's good?
Yeah.
Right?
He says, I can't do
it. He has consent. He says this. We love Joseph, but he doesn't say, how could I do this to my boss? Yeah. He doesn't say, oh my God, I can't do this. His statement is, how could I do this to the Lord?
Yeah.
You see where his covenant is?
Yeah.
How could I do this?
Heart is.
How could I do this to God? Mm-hmm. How could I do this
That's
to
beautiful.
The Lord?
Really
Which, maybe, let's talk about this in another episode. Because the question I have, and this is me just being controversial, is that wasn't the first time she tried to seduce him. There had been multiple times. Right. My question to Joseph is, why are you still close enough that she can ask and take your robe off, big guy?
Yeah.
Right? Which to me points that no matter what the situation, you can always flee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can always run out. Right? But it's all a matter of your covenant.
Yeah.
Like what drives? And I don't believe.
Your ultimate covenant will drive all other covenants.
That's a good word right there.
Yeah.
Your ultimate covenant will drive every other covenant.
If I'm 100%. Faithful to the Lord, I'll be faithful to my wife.
To everything else.
That's a good word.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great place to end this conversation. Man, I hope this is blessing y'all. It blessed me. If I'm faithful to the Lord, I can be faithful in my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable. I hope that helps you. Thanks for letting us be in your ear. Let us be on your screen. Hey, listen, we say this every single time, okay? We love it when we hear from you. So blow us up. Many of y'all shot us DMs. I got some text messages from people in the culture like, man, this last episode was so rich.
Yeah.
There was this shout out to Nani. She serves on our team. Leilani is her name, but we call her Nani. She sent me like two photos of like four pages of notes off the first episode this season.
Oh, it's awesome.
It was incredible. So shout out to you, my girl. I'm really proud of you. But listen, we love to hear back from you. Hit that subscribe button, hit the alert, follow us on Instagram. All the ways to get connected to the culture, if you're watching on YouTube, are in the show description. Or you can just go to Instagram at This Prime Culture. Get connected to what God is doing. We love y'all. We're so proud of you. I'm so glad we get to do this culture together. Till next time, love y'all.
Love you.
Peace.